Committee on Budget, Public Safety Subcommittee for Wednesday, June 22, 2005, for the purpose of a work session on Senate Bill 5614, the Oregon Military Department, and that will be followed by a public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 738-A, Fire Safe Cigarettes. And we will be at ease for a few minutes while we wait for Senator Devlin to arrive, which should be shortly. And Colonel Caldwell, I would just ask you to come forward and bring anyone that you would like to join you as we work our way. As we work our way through the LFO recommendations. And again, hope all is going well with you.
Yes, ma'am, it is. We're very busy.
Yes.
Yes. If I confer with Tom, just right outside. But I'll be here for all the recommendations. Yes.
We're going to be at ease then until how many minutes, do you need?
60 seconds.
We'll be at ease for about 60 seconds. Jordan, if you would like to take us through the recommendations.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I have put at your place the work session papers for Senate Bill 5614. The first page is just a summary of the governor's recommended budget and a historical view of the agency's budget compared to the LFO recommendation. This budget is virtually the same budget that was passed out of the joint committee public safety subcommittee process, with the exception of adding a 3% reduction in services and supplies and capital outlay, and taking out the supplemental expenditure limitation, which has now been moved into another bill. So I'm just going to quickly run through what the changes are to the governor's recommended budget. The first change on page 2 are the technical adjustments that reduce the budget a total of $533,987 total funds, which includes the 3% services and supplies and capital outlay reduction. Then the policy packages, the package 082, the Ochoco facility lease, adds $1.4 million general fund to the agency budget to pay lease payments to the Department of Administrative Services. Package 083 is debt service for the 2005-07 certificates of participation issued for the Salem Army Aviation Support Facility project at $459,300 general fund. The package 108 was not recommended and is still not recommended at this time. It's the unspecified National Guard appreciation package. The Senate budget plan has $5 million set aside once all of the proposals are evaluated by the substantive committees and sent to Joint Ways and Means. That will all be put together and prioritized by the subcommittee for subcommittee chair and Senate chair.
So in effect, there will be a what we're calling a National Guard appreciation package. The elements are just still being worked out.
That's correct. Package 110 adds administrative positions for at $85,623 other funds. We recommended approval and adding one FTE. Package 201 adds general funds and federal funds to Portland Air National Guard Base to support facilities, operation, and maintenance activities at the Portland Air Guard Base. We recommend approval. Package 202 is also general funds and federal funds for Kingsley Field Air National Base for support facility, operations, and maintenance activities. Package 205 is Baker City Readiness Center, $86,551. We recommended approval, but shifting the source of funds from general funds to other funds. Package 206, Lane County Field Maintenance Shop, $70,940. $48,049,665 federal funds. The $70,000 had been requested with general funds. We recommended shifting to other funds. Package 207 was the Army National Guard installation positions, $81,493 federal funds. We recommend approval. Package 211, Central Oregon Readiness Center, $60,000 general fund. We recommend approval. Package 212, the Army National Guard Operations and Maintenance Federal Funds, an increase in money coming to the state for $5 million federal funds. We recommend approval. Package 216, the Kingsley Field and Portland Air Base Family Program, an increase in federal funds of $19,350. We recommended approval. Package 217, position reclassifications, $34,981 federal funds. We recommended approval. And package 218 converts five limited duration positions to permanent. These are five positions, $493,455 federal funds. Package 219 converts two limited duration positions for the readiness sustainment maintenance site at Camp Withicum in Clackamas. That's two positions, $169,438 federal funds. Package 220 is an operations staffing levels, an increase of 4.5 FTE at $472,685 other funds. We recommend approval. And package 403 converts one limited duration position to permanent full-time for work with at-risk youth in the Youth Challenge Program, $33,350 other funds and $50,026 federal funds, and we recommend approval of that.
The chair will take a motion to approve the technical adjustments and recommendations of the Legislative Fiscal Office on the policy packages.
Madam Chair, I move that the subcommittee approve the technical adjustments, LFO recommendations on policy packages, and the capital construction budget.
And the capital construction budget?
That was on my...
Yes.
That's good.
That's... I can describe it very quickly for you.
If you would.
It's just a separate package. Package 499 is actually contained in a separate bill but requires recommendation from the subcommittee. Package requests $7,750,000 federal funds and $2 million other funds for construction projects at Camp Rylea and the Salem Mail Distribution Center and Camp Withicum.
Very good. The chair accepts the motion as stated. Any discussion? Objection? The record show so ordered. Approved.
Thank you. Madam Chair, then we would move to approving the budget bill in the amount of $84,122,756.429.91 FTE by inserting all of the language from House Bill 5051 into Senate Bill 5614 with the following numbers that you are shown on your work session papers.
The chair will take a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the subcommittee approve the amendments to Senate Bill 5614 with the due pass recommendation to the full Committee on Budget.
We have a motion to approve the amendments to Senate Bill 5614 with a due pass recommendation to the full Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any objection? Seeing none, the motion is approved.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Then we have performance measures. The agency had two measures, subcommittee. The Joint Subcommittee requested adding, and LFO recommends adding, a measure for comparison of revenue generated from the facility rental to potential revenue capacity as a measure for their facility program, and adding three measures for the Youth Challenge Program: the percent of students graduating from the academic phase, percent of 17 to 18-year-olds completing their GED or high school diploma at graduation, and the number of students who are still in school or working 12 months after graduating the program, and adding the percent of production for refurbished military equipment meeting the National Guard Bureau requirements, and adding the two customer service measures that are added in all agency budgets.
Colonel Caldwell, let me ask here if the agency is comfortable with the performance measures as they have been described.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, indeed we keep
all of that data presently. It's a matter of putting it into the proper format. The one caution I would have is that the Youth Challenge Program 12-month back, or the collection of data on the 12 months, over the last biennium, we cut positions out of that particular segment of our program in order to adequately man the day-to-day efforts, and we're still below that. So I'm going to say we're doing the best we can with that, but that is one of the weakest areas that we have within that program, is collecting that data, because we don't have the personnel to do it in the current staffing model. So we rely on mentors and students to report, and that's not a absolute 100% capture. We recognize that. We get a good number, get a high percentage, but it isn't 100%.
I would like, Ms. Jordan, the report to the Senate Budget Committee to reflect the challenge that Colonel Caldwell has just described, the challenge around staffing capacity and ability to
collect data.
Exactly.
Yes.
Madam Chair, I might also add that we fully intend to, at this point, to come to the September e-board on at least two items, one of which is Youth Challenge, and that is dependent on the ADMW rate. And that, of course, has not been decided by the legislature yet. That's a key component to the total fiscal package of Youth Challenge, and until that's decided, we're not real sure where we're at. We may be okay, depending on what you all do, but right now we don't anticipate that, so we're thinking that we're going to need to come back and present that, our dilemma or our situation, to this body at the September e-board.
We will also make note of that in the report to the Senate Budget Committee as well.
And I'll just add one more thing, that second item that we fully intend to come in is, right now we're running a reintegration program for our soldiers who are returning from Iraq and Afghanistan and other deployments. We've been taking that out of Hyde. We've been doing a limited duration employees, and we're using funds that we had remaining from this fiscal year that we hadn't expended for maintenance and other things. We're not going to be able to sustain that program that way, and as we see what the federal government's going to do, we've been kind of waiting with bated breath for them to pick up the lion's share of the tab, and they have, but we think we're going to need at least one position, if not two, for that if we continue to do it. And we fully intend to do it. It's an absolute essential piece to getting these soldiers reintegrated back into the communities and their jobs. Again, that wasn't fleshed out well enough for us to present that during this phase, so we hope to have it ready for September.
Very good. And again, Ms. Jordan, I'd like that information to be detailed in the report with emphasis. That's a priority. Thank you very much. Any additional comments?
Appreciate this committee's understanding and working with us during this process. I know it's difficult. You've got a lot of work ahead of you. We're a small piece of the big pie. We understand that. But without your interest, state funding and the state resources are essential for us to exist, and we really appreciate you understanding that.
I'd like to thank you again for all the arrangements that you made together with Ms. Jordan for the tour, the helicopter tour over to Camp Withicum and up to the base in Portland. That was very, very helpful to my understanding, to our understanding of the challenges that you face. And again, really appreciate your efforts.
I would just remind you, at any time after the session is concluded, if you have time and you want to come visit us or get a group of your colleagues, certainly feel free to either call me or Ms. Jordan, and we'll be more than happy. We've got a lot to look at. We've got the third largest number of square footage in the state of Oregon with respect to state agencies, behind DAS and the universities. So we've got a lot of good things to look at, and we'd be more than willing to take you to those and give you a tour based on your time schedule, and we can either go helicopter or fixed wing.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your service. Senator Devlin?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
concur with your comments, Madam Chair, but I just had a question for Colonel Caldwell, and it's kind of a sensitive question to ask, but is there any feeling that we're at a point where we're at the peak of our call-ups and it's going to start to decline, or is there anything on the horizon that says things are going to be different the next year or two?
Madam Chair, Senator Devlin,
you're having called up and the number, you know.
Yes, sir. We have another call-up of a 54-man unit, personnel unit, that's being called up in August, right from Salem. And so to answer your question, system-wide, Army-wide, Army Guard-wide, no, we don't see any major changes in the near term. Everything we see and everything we read tells us that there's going to be a continual need for soldiers and units to do these missions that we have in Afghanistan, Iraq, Sinai, and all over the world. In fact, in March, this next March, we will be sending probably close to 2,000 guardsmen to Afghanistan in the 41st Separate Infantry Brigade. And they will be departing Oregon in March sometime, but the date isn't certain yet, to train the Afghan Army. So I guess that's the bad news. The good news, I guess, is that once we get that deployment accomplished, we don't have a lot left. We've already been there and gone through this. So the real question is how soon will those rotations begin again? And I think that is dependent on a lot of things, one of which is recruiting and throughout the United States and the United States Army, because Congress has increased the size. But whether or not they obviously, from everything we see in the news, they're not meeting that requirement, and they're not meeting their goals. So I think it's a crystal ball at this point.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Devlin, really appreciate the question. And again, the answer from Colonel Caldwell is very revealing. Again, this is information that needs to be shared, needs to be understood by members of the Senate Budget Committee. So if you would reflect the call-up details that have been provided, that would be most helpful.
If I could, I would like to add one more caveat to this. And I don't want to paint a doom and gloom picture for the Oregon National Guard. As you know, General Reese will be assuming the leadership of the Guard on the 1st of July. He has been out for 60 days now, or the best part of 60 days, going to every unit, looking at every facility, and he's going to do a thorough report for the governor upon his taking over command. The positive news that we're seeing from this hands-on, eyeball-to-eyeball visit is that our people's morale is very, very good right now, even with all of the tough, difficult service that they've been asked to provide. So we're feeling confident that that's a good sign. Our retention is better than what we anticipated from the units that are just coming back from Iraq. We're seeing good signs with the units that we have in Iraq. I spoke to the commander this morning. He called me from Iraq, and we're seeing good signs from retention there. Our recruiting is up in eastern Oregon. We're meeting our goals in eastern and southern Oregon. We're not meeting them in the Willamette Valley or the metro area. So I don't know what that all means, and we're kind of flying, you know, in the fog right now, trying to figure out what these signs mean and what the future may hold. But I guess the good news is that the soldiers' morale is very good, and that's a very, very important aspect to us being a positive influence for these people and keeping them in uniform and in service to the state and to the country. So hopefully that'll continue, but I read the papers and watch the news just like you all do, and things don't look so good right now with respect to any time soon getting out of there. And that could weigh heavily on people's decisions to reenlist if they are to. The plan right now is the Guard units will only go once every 5 years. That is the plan, the national plan. That may or may not be the case, depending on the manpower needs and the requirements. But that's what we're banking on at this point.
Very good. Well, again, we're just very blessed to have the quality of your leadership, Colonel, and the service of all of the fine men and women serving under your leadership. So We share our highest regards.
We will do so. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Yes, we did. Okay, we have a motion to approve the additions to the performance measures as presented by LFO. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, that motion is approved. And I will carry the bill to the full committee.
We're changing staff here.
Thank you very much. And I'm going to close the hearing or the work session on Senate Bill 5614 and then the public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 738-A. Fire Safe Cigarettes, and I understand that Mr. Whalen, is he still present?
Just walked out. Oh, there he is.
Okay, Mr. Whalen and someone else is with him if they'd like to come up. Wilson.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, this is Senate Bill 738 dealing with fire safe cigarettes. I know of no amendments that were brought forward, and I'd appreciate it if anyone does have amendments, please let me know by signaling to me here in the next minute or two so we can make sure that everything works out. This bill requires the state fire marshal to determine if fire safe cigarettes sold in Oregon are fire safe. The proponents of the bill have said that the state fire marshal reports that cigarettes are a major cause of fires across the state. I think they said the fourth major cause of structural fires. This bill would require that the state fire marshal develop a testing and certify or determine that cigarettes are fire safe. Keep a list of fire-safe cigarettes that may be sold, and then this also sets up civil penalties for those persons that sell varieties of cigarettes that are not on the list that the fire marshal has determined that are fire-safe. And when we get to the work session, Madam Chair, if we get to that point today, I'll talk a little bit about the fiscal impact of this bill. But do you have a list of five or six, it looks like, testifiers.
Very good. Let's start with Mr. Whalen.
Thank you, Chair Gordley, esteemed members of the committee.
We are feeling pretty esteemed this afternoon.
It's interesting. This subject has followed me and tracked my own career. When I was a new firefighter at the city of Salem, I was working at a downtown station, and our fire marshal came trotting back from the Capitol with his hangdog look. I said, "What happened?" He said, "We got rolled by the tobacco boys over at the Capitol. They had attempted in 1979 to get a what was then called self-extinguishing cigarette law passed in this state." It showed up, Tim was pursuing it early in the 80s, and at that point it kind of went into remission and was studied at the federal level, and some understandings of the issue were arrived at that we can now benefit from. So it's had a long gestation period, but it has suddenly broken through with the adoption in 2000 in New York State of what is now called a fire-safe cigarette law, and it became effective last June. Let me tell you how I stumbled into it most recently. I was teaching a fire science class at Winter Haven Middle School in Salem, and or in Portland, excuse me. And in my research, I used a cigarette as an example of what the combustion process was all about. It was a perfect example of it. I've always marveled at them. And in the process of doing a little research, now with the internet available to me, I
discovered that the fire safe cigarette had reemerged and in fact become law, and in fact was scheduled to become effective last June 28th in New York State. So why the cigarette is interesting as a source of combustion or source of ignition is the odds against a rolled package of leaf like that, a column of tobacco rolled in paper burning from one end to the other uninterrupted, is unprecedented. In my experience, I never ran into a marijuana joint caused fire, never ran into a cigar caused fire, never ran into a pipe caused fire, only cigarettes. Everything has to be held in the very, in the most delicate and perfect equilibrium to burn from one end of that to the other. The diameter of the smoking column has to be just right. Can't be too fat. Can't be too thin. Can't be too wide. The porosity of the paper is critical so the fuel can be oxygenated. The fuel has to be packed to a certain density. Too dense, it will not be oxygenated, because they not only want that cigarette to burn when it's being puffed, they want it to burn when it's sitting on an ashtray, and there lies the problem. It's a freak of nature. Now, there has been efforts at the federal level as early as the late 1920s in Massachusetts Congresswoman, I believe it's the first Congresswoman in U.S. history, complained of the wildland fires that were being started in her district in August and September, and so she had what was in the Bureau of Standards come to an understanding of it. The bill went nowhere. I think at that time the tobacco company simply wanted that cigarette to burn, whatever the means, continue to burn because it had to be replaced by the smoker who had to smoke it to get a level of nicotine in his blood to feel comfortable. I have a patent from 1935 which has the very same principles enumerated and drawn to specification. It was the Self-Extinguishing Cigarette Corporation of New York. And they fully grasped it. It's not that hard to grasp. They fully understood what it was all about. So at any rate, we now know that there was at least 7 years these could have been produced. Now, the research that was done, the more modern research, was done in the 80s. They first discovered over industry assertions to the contrary that they could, in fact, make one of those cigarettes. They then had a subsequent committee that found a way to measure whether or not a cigarette can be made and how to test for it. And that was ready to go in 2004 at Congress, and it has since, at the insistence of the tobacco industry, been stalled there. So if you hear assertions from the tobacco industry that this really should be a national solution to the problem, just bear in mind that they're the reason, they are solely the reason why there has not been a national solution to the problem. So the states have taken it up. New York in 2000, Canada, for the entire nation of Canada, a fire safe cigarette law becomes effective in October, and most recently within the last month, Vermont has become the second state to adopt it. California is halfway through the process now. Whether it'll get through California, I'm not sure. Again, it's the number one cause of fire-related deaths, year in, year out. We have lost probably anywhere from 6 to 11 Oregonians a year to it. And it's not... they're not like other victims of tobacco who die out of sight with a family at their bedside. This is kind of a community event. It happens in the community square. Firefighters have to risk their lives. These are terrible fires to fight because typically the smoker and their family have been incapacitated by carbon monoxide well in advance of the flames. If they survive, they are the worst of the worst of the patients in the burn unit. It is not unusual for the care for a burn victim to run over $1 million, standard. a child that has burned 95% of their body and they're able to survive that could end up having to go through 70 to 80 operations at a cost of $5-7 million. All of those costs, or none of those costs, are borne by the tobacco companies. None of the costs for lost firefighters' lives are borne by the tobacco companies. None of the costs for their injuries are borne by the tobacco companies. Tobacco companies make the product, sell the product, and wash their hands of it and claim the phrase smoker's carelessness, when in fact it's a cigarette-caused fire. It has nothing to do with smoker's carelessness. These are freaks of nature that they put out in the market and refuse to change their ways. They insist on, or will insist to you, I'm sure, that they want to continue to sell those. But the reason is on the ascendance. We've now have two states. I hope this is the third. All of Canada and the entire nation is becoming alerted to the truth behind this matter. The Oregon Fire Service is united in their support of this. We have members of the Oregon Fire District directors, board directors, the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association, the Oregon Fire Marshals Association in the room. They have written testimony. They'd be happy to testify if you'd be interested. Nancy Orr, the state fire marshal, is here to talk about the budget aspects of it. But I think the important thing to understand is that there is a minuscule fiscal impact of the 48,000 the state fire marshal thinks she will need on this for this biennium. None of that will affect the general fund. It can only positively affect the general fund in that those inevitable forest fires, as the 75 to 80 of those per year are caused by cigarettes. We can hope that that number will be knocked down. The first bedroom fire that doesn't happen is going to pay back to the fire insurance premium tax the $48,000 it will cost her to enforce this. So I certainly urge that you pass this on with a due pass recommendation of the full committee. I'd like to introduce Tim Burr, who is my partner. I have known him since he was pursuing this in the late 70s, and I used to laugh at him in those days. It was a fool's errand, I told him. But when he got the word from me that I had hoped to get a law similar to New York's passed in this state, he told him he felt like a supercell that had been finally notified by Al-Qaeda that he was to rise and perform his act. So he's been an inspired member of the team. Chuck Tallman, who has been involved in tobacco litigation, has also assisted us mightily with the drafting of the law and hoping to conform it to the New York model so you don't have a patchwork of different states' laws out there. We want to be faithful to the science and faithful to the work that's been done in New York ahead of us. We're really benefiting from the industry and money that they've invested in this problem, and simply are going to, I imagine, grandfather the 800 or so different brandings or packings of cigarettes that have already been approved or being sold in New York. Billions of cigarettes this year will be sold in New York that are fire safe. What we're saying is send them over here. Add a night shift. Get them our way. There's absolutely no reason that we should be losing people. This is an entirely preventable phenomenon.
Mr. Whalen, before we go to Mr. Burr, looking at Mr. Wilson's report to the committee, it indicates that there are some national testing standards that are also laid out in the bill, and that testing would likely be done by outside firms. are those firms, are those Oregon businesses that we're talking about? Could you say more about that aspect?
Yeah, no, as it stands right now, the fire marshal, Nancy would be able to more specifically answer that question.
All right.
But as it stands right now, there are only two or three labs that are set up to do this testing. Since there are only two states and we're on the way, I'm sure it's what one might consider a growth industry. The prices they're now charging for that can only go down in the future.
Then we'll hear more about that from Ms. Orr when she's with us. Mr. Burr, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Chair Gorby, members of the committee. My name is Tim Burr. The last name is spelled B-I-R-R. And I reside at 12070 Southwest Fisher Road in Tigard. I'm here today to join Tom in urging your support for this piece of legislation. I just want to take a moment of your time and amplify a couple of points that he made and add my own experience to it. As Tom mentioned, I was involved as a young, possibly, arguably, politically naive Eugene firefighter in the early 1980s. The first fatal fire that I responded to was a fire in a fraternity house at the University of Oregon that took the life of a young woman. That fire was caused by a cigarette which had been left in an overstuffed chair in the course of a party late one night at that fraternity house. I became aware shortly after that there was a question, an issue nationally regarding the fire safety of cigarettes, and that there were a lot of folks that believed that the industry, in fact, had designed their product deliberately to continue to burn, whether it was being actively smoked or not. The more that I read about it, the more that I became convinced of that, and I was involved before this legislature in the 1981 and 1983 sessions in efforts to try to pass state-level legislation. In both of those cases at that time, the tobacco industry was at its absolute zenith of power. The Tobacco Institute was still an active institution, and we, quite frankly, got our rear ends kicked royally. At that time, there was a lot of work being done at the federal level, so I kind of backed away from the issue. There are, however, a number of things that have occurred in the intervening years. One of those is that the litigation that has taken place against the tobacco industry at the national level has prized a lot of internal corporate memoranda and documents onto the public record. Those documents clearly show, you can make the case using the industry's own documents, that the industry has had the ability to make a safer cigarette from a fire safety standard since the mid-1980s. And in fact, the industry is doing that right now in New York, where it's been forced to do so without any great difficulty. There are a couple of other things that have happened. While the industry has continued to fight efforts to pass a national standard, it did agree in the 1980s to a series of studies. Those studies resulted in the establishment of the standard that's being used today in New York State and that we're advocating for here. So there's been an agreement on that. The other thing that have happened, as Tom mentioned, this is not a Rube Goldberg crazy brainstorm that a handful of people around the country have had. The reality is that these cigarettes are now being sold in the state of New York. Health Canada announced 2 weeks ago that the plan is totally in place. This will become the law in all of Canada, the entire nation, October 1st of this year. Vermont has just passed a law. It's, I think, extremely difficult to argue on the merits that it can't be done because, quite frankly, it is being done in different places. The only thing that has changed is that in the quarter of a century since I first came to this legislature to talk about this issue, we've lost an estimated 25,000 Americans to fires involving cigarettes. Not all of these victims have been smokers. They have included the children sleeping in the apartment upstairs, the neighbor next door, and in some cases the responding firefighter. When Tom contacted me to join him in this effort, it was ironic because I had ended my service. I am 30 years in the Oregon Fire Service. I was with the Eugene Fire Department for 21 years and then with Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue for 9 when I retired as a division chief. Ironically, my service ended at the end of calendar year 2004 on New Year's Eve. On the night of January 13th, I received a phone call that TVFNR was engaged in a two-alarm apartment fire in the city of West Lynn. The folks that would have responded to it to do the public information part of the job were unavailable and was asked if I would respond. I responded to what I assumed would be the last structure fire that I would ever respond to, and it proved to be a fire which took the life of a woman named Pamela Lynn Hernandez. Investigators determined that the cause of that fire was a cigarette in her apartment. The first fatal fire that I responded to was a cigarette fire. The last fatal fire that I responded to was a cigarette fire. It has been a quarter century, and we continue to try to seek an answer to this. And I thank you for your interest today. Quite frankly, we've been a bit stalled in this session. I know as a lot of things have been lately, and we very much appreciate your taking the time today to hear about this issue. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, both gentlemen. Senator Devlin, did you have questions for the panel?
No, Madam Chair. Appreciate their testimony.
Again, thank you. Nancy Orr and is it Tari Blocker?
Tari Blocker.
You'll pronounce that correctly for me on the record, and I apologize for mangling your name.
Chair Gordley, Senator Devlin, I'm Nancy Orr, State Fire Marshal. Thank you for your time of bringing this issue back up in the legislature. As you know, cigarette-caused fires are perennially a leading cause of fire in Oregon. I've put a brief summary of that on the back of my testimony, which I forgot to give you. The $5 million per year loss, I want to remind you, is a direct fire loss. It does not include the indirect costs to families, businesses, and our communities. We need an engineering change to solve this problem. I believe that if we require that the only cigarettes sold in Oregon are those that go out when discarded or dropped, we will significantly reduce our cigarette-caused fire problem in Oregon. The cost to implement this is minimal. The estimate is $48,000 per biennium for testing the cigarettes for compliance. You asked about the testing labs, and I'd like to introduce John Wakefield, our budget analyst. He has information about those.
My name is John Wakefield. I'm the budget analyst for the State Fire Marshal's Office. The information that I've gathered from the state of New York indicates that there are two laboratories that are available that could do the proposed testing. One is Kidd Fenwall, and the other is Arista Laboratories. And the testing, the costs per test are somewhere between $500 and $800.
The costs that you're citing, are those costs included in the cost of the bill, the $48,000?
Chair Gordley, Senator Devlin, the cost that we've estimated is strictly for the laboratory testing. We feel that this fits within our mission. Fire prevention is what we do, and we can enact this policy, if you so desire, without additional staff and without raising or establishing any new fees. What we're asking for is spending limitation of $48,000 in fire insurance premium tax revenues, which I believe is appropriate considering the huge potential to prevent fires in Oregon.
And let me double-check something here. I want to make sure that Diane, our recording clerk, got the names of the two companies, the testing companies. Did you get that? Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Wakefield. Please continue.
That's all I have. Senator Devlin.
Senator Devlin?
Madam Chair, I just wanted to clarify one thing. On page 2, section 2, subsection 1, there is a reference to the fire marshal accepting testing conducted by a source the state fire marshal recognizes as reliable. With the states that have been indicated that are actually, that have passed these laws that are going into place, and with Canada doing the same, I would assume that one of the references in earlier testimony would be true, that cigarette brands that had been tested in another jurisdiction, published by the same labs, that proved to be fire safe, that you would consider them fire safe and they would not have to be retested again.
Chair Gordley, Senator Devlin, that is correct.
Thank you for making that point, Senator Devlin. Was that the conclusion of your testimony?
Yes, ma'am, it is.
Fire Marshal Orr, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
And please pronounce your name for us?
Chair Gordley, Senator Devlin, I'm here as president of the Oregon Farm Marshals Association. My name is Terry Glocum, and I'm here today just to thank you again for giving us the opportunity to testify on this bill and to let you know that our Farm Marshals Association strongly supports this bill. I'm not going to go through my testimony in its entirety because much of it is testimony that's already been provided to you regarding the statistical information on fire deaths and fire loss in Oregon. So on behalf of the Fire Marshals Association, I just strongly encourage you to support and pass this bill. And if you have any questions of me, I'd be happy to answer those.
Thank you very much for your testimony this afternoon. We appreciate you taking time to be here.
You're welcome.
Senator Devlin, questions or comments?
Oh, no.
All right.
No. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I have two folks signed up, Mark Nelson and Genoa Ingram. And is there anyone else who would like to testify? All right, after we hear from these next two, we'll add you to the list.
Madam Chair, bring Mr. Coase stand up as well with me, if that's okay.
Who does not look like Genoa Ingram.
That's true. That's true. He's much better.
Mr. Nelson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mark Nelson, representing R.J. Reynolds Tobacco. We appear today in opposition to Senate Bill 738, and I'll outline some primary concerns and then talk about what we believe are two important fiscal issues. One is the actual cost of implementing this legislation, and two, the attended cost to the lost revenue that we will continue to receive as a result of this legislation. As has been indicated, there's a multitude of states are considering this legislation as well as the country of Canada. And our principal concern from a manufacturing point of view is that we do not want to design and manufacture cigarettes based upon standards laid out in 50 different states by 50 different fire marshals or officials. We believe that what has been outlined today, and you will find in subsection 2 of the bill, lays out a standard that is going to be interpreted differently by different officials in different states. I think as Mr. Whalen has indicated, there is legislation in Congress to try to come up with a national standard. And R.J. Reynolds is supporting that effort. And we believe that this is something that should be done on a national basis rather than state by state. Again, we oppose a state by state approach because we believe there will be different standards in different states applied by different people. There's been some discussion in terms of the cost. We would be, we contacted the, I think it's pronounced Kidda Fenwall in Holliston, Maine. They are the exclusive contractor with New York State. Now, this is about 2 months ago, and there was a reference to a second company, but my understanding is this company is the exclusive contractor. At that point in time, they said the cost is approximately $1,000 per sub-brand, and there are hundreds of sub-brands that they are testing. Now, as has been indicated, Section 6 allows the fire marshal to accept, prior to the effective date of this act, those certifications from the state of New York. But what hasn't been indicated is there are approximately, each year, approximately 80 new brand styles that are introduced in the country. And at that alone, we would be talking about at the $1,000, at about $160,000. In addition to that, in Section 4, it outlines the process for issuing of civil penalties, and in Section 5 says that the action may be brought by the Attorney General at the request of the Office of State Fire Marshal. There are no costs estimated in terms of enforcement for this, in terms of that we believe are realistic. So we believe that the costs are, in fact, substantially greater than what has been indicated. Finally, and then this will segue into Mr. Kosasen's testimony, as you all know, as we have dramatically increased prices of tobacco products in the state since 1996, as those taxes have increased, our revenue has in fact decreased. If you go to the Centers for Disease Control, they do a survey of every state in terms of what percentage of the state's population are smoking. The numbers of smokers in Oregon have remained consistently between 21.5% and 22.5% since 1996, according to the CDC numbers. Anti-tobacco proponents, I don't believe, have disputed that, but they have said that there's less consumption by those who continue to smoke. But our point is that we have now developed a gray market in a black market, and a gray market in the tobacco products, a gray market being those tobacco products that are not tax stamped, that are destined to be shipped out of the country and find their way back into the country, being sold without the payment of taxes. Black market is the obvious what it is. Internet sales. Cross-border sales, for example, Idaho, I believe, is 28 cents per pack. We're now at $1.18. A large cargo van would make about $70,000, bringing those cigarettes bring those cigarettes in from Idaho, and then Indian sales. All of this combines to lower the amount of revenue that is coming into Oregon. The estimate in 2001 by the Department of Revenue was $100 million of tax revenues that we are foregoing. We believe this will simply cause an increase in the sale of non-tax cigarettes through the multitude of sources that I have just outlined, continuing to diminish the revenue that the state will receive. The estimate in New York was a 3% decline. It in fact is hovering about 5% now. That alone would account for about around $20 million decrease in revenue available to the state this biennium. And we believe the 5% is actually very, very low. But Mr. Kosasen has some additional data for you. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I have a question. Mr. Nelson, you made reference to a measure currently before Congress, and I believe you said that R.J. Reynolds is supporting.
Yeah, that is correct.
Before Congress.
That's correct.
What would that measure before Congress accomplish, and what are the prospects for passage soon?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I haven't seen that actual measure, but my understanding is it would set an overall standard for safe cigarettes that would be imposed nationwide. Now, I have to say we have in the past, and Mr. Whalen is correct, in the past we have opposed that legislation, as has Philip Morris. But it's my understanding that both companies now, I think they're working on language, but both companies are in support.
What has changed to bring about that support?
Madam Chair, I think it's members of the committee. I think it has been a further refinement of the product. I mean, there is, I believe it's Philip Morris, and I'm trying to remember the brand. Merit was put out nationally as a fire-safe cigarette, and I'm not representing here Phil Moore, so I say nationally it may be test states. My understanding, I heard numbers of 20 to 35% decrease in sales of that product. I think that it's principally the result of individuals having to constantly relight. It goes out and having to relight the cigarette. And there are some data out of the New York study, a recently released Harvard School of Public Health study that in New York, looking at New York, found that the only available technology tends to increase yields of carbon monoxide and tar. So I think part of this has been how to define what that standard is and the quality of the product when you apply that standard. But long answer, I don't know all the reasons.
I appreciate your response. Thank you. Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Nelson, is it your understanding that the federal legislation, that should it pass, that it would preempt local standards?
Madam Chair, Senator Devlin, that would be my understanding. I cannot imagine the industry supporting a piece that wouldn't preempt state standards. And that has been how the national tobacco standards and statutes have been all these years. We have not had a situation where states have been allowed to dictate state by state how the design and manufacture of this particular product, and I understand this, you know, people have hard feelings or strong feelings about the product, but set that aside. We don't assign these kinds of standards to these kinds of products on a state-by-state basis, and there's been a reason for that. We simply can't manufacture and design product for 50 different analysis.
Follow-up.
Certainly.
Mr. Nelson, then someone could make the argument that the more states that go out and do this now, the more impetus for the federal legislation to pass.
Madam Chair, Senator Devlin, that is an argument.
Did you have additional comments, Mr. Nelson? Or,
no.
All right. Thank you so much.
Senator, my name is Richard Kosasian. I'm with the Oregon Neighborhood Stores Association, which is a group of primarily convenience, small, independent-owned stores throughout the state. What I provided you was a very quick overview of cigarette tax revenues derived from the cigarette tax going to the state of Oregon from 91 to 2005. The second page is, I guess, some general notes in terms of the tax increases throughout the years, and basically the tax impact that it has had on the stream of revenues. First of all, when this measure was before the Senate Commerce Committee earlier in the spring, the Neighborhood Stores Association was promoting what was alluded to earlier in terms of moving towards a national standard. If you look at the state of Oregon, and I think you should note the difference, Oregon's population represents about 1% of the U.S. New York's is significantly larger. If you were to restrict this type of sale in the state of Oregon, would it have a detrimental impact on the retail business? I think the answer is unequivocally yes. But if you look at those numbers, Mr. Nelson alluded to it earlier, the Department of Revenue itself indicated, I think, 4 years ago, that due to internet sales, black market, gray market activities, the state of Oregon was losing approximately $100 million in legitimate tax revenues. I would bring your attention to the years of 98 through 2002. In 98, the state, in the fiscal year ending June 30th of 98, the state collected approximately $183 million. In revenues. In 2002, the state collected $155 million in revenues. So you basically lost nearly 16% of your revenues when the consumption rate within the state remained relatively flat. If you look at the increase during that period of time, you are moving from 68 cents, well, the last major increase really was effective February 1, 1997, The last increase we know was November of 2002. So you experienced a revenue decrease, and I think that was the first sign of internet sales. If one were to, I think, isolate Oregon and create such a standard, I think what you would see in the retail business, you would see a propensity of the individuals to move to internet sales. And again, that would have a major impact on your revenues. Earlier in the spring, and perhaps it could have been last year, the state of Maine took a look and reviewed the feasibility of developing a fire-safe cigarette standard. I believe in Maine, their fiscal office indicated that they anticipated a 2% reduction in revenues. So if you took a 2% reduction off of the state's current revenue stream, you would look at nearly $5 million a year. Mr. Nelson alluded to Philip Morris, and they indicated that one brand, and I believe from recall that was a Merit brand, had a trial basis with banded paper for the fire safe standard. And their experience was a very, very substantial reduction in sales, I think 20% plus. But if you were to take a look at a 10% reduction in Oregon revenues, you would be looking at a $20 to $25 million loss in state revenues per year. Again, I think that should be considered in terms of part of this debate. As we indicated earlier in the spring, we are supportive of a national standard, but to isolate Oregon and the potential impact retailers would feel, I don't think is the prudent way to go.
Thank you for your testimony. A question or a comment for Mr. Kosestan? All right. Thank you again.
Madam Chair, I would just add one other piece of information, which I didn't add. In New York, they estimate now, and it's not just because of fire safe, I want to emphasize that more than 50% of New York retail sales take place through untaxed sources at this point. And what we're trying to emphasize is that this adds to that situation, forcing customers, in this case, not to avoid a tax, but to find a different, to retain the tobacco products that they're using now, to force them into an untaxed situation.
Okay. Thank you very much. Is Genoa Ingram here? Okay, please come forward. And Mr. Kosestan, let's make sure we actually get you signed up on our official record so that, okay. We like to dot the I's and cross the T's in this committee. And if there's anyone else who wants to testify, please let us know that. Ms. Ingram.
Thank you, Chair Gordley, committee. I'm Genoa Ingram, representing the Oregon Fire District Directors Association. You've already heard the facts and the statistics, and I won't belabor those. I just want to add a few quick points. The Oregon Fire District Directors Association takes turns every session with the chiefs. We trade off staffing a little group called the Joint Legislative Fire Committee. And what that group does, we're first made up of the fire chiefs, the fire district directors, the 911 operators, the emergency medical technicians, the League of Oregon Cities, and others associated with the with public safety. And I can tell you that the public safety community is wholeheartedly in support of Senate Bill 738. I've heard the fire marshal testify that she believes that the fire marshal's office can administer this program without any additional fees, and we believe that to be true. You've also heard that that these types of cigarettes are already being produced in New York, so it wouldn't be something that the companies would have to do just for Oregon. And I think the biggest argument you've heard is that there may be a cost impact to the state of Oregon. We fully believe that there will be a substantial cost savings, however, to Oregon in terms of the savings of lives and property. And I'm sure you would agree that you can't put a price on saving lives. Very quickly, I did promise Ken Armstrong with the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association that I would mention that he would be here in support of the bill. However, he had a crisis in another part of the building that called him away, and I promised that I would put in his support of the bill as well. And I thank you very, very much for hearing the bill, Chair.
Thank you very much, Ms. Ingram.
Thank you.
Sir?
Chair Gordley, Senator Devlin, I want to thank you first for having this hearing. We were concerned, obviously, things were stalled, and so it was heartening to know that we were going to get a chance to talk about this bill that we consider to be very important. My name is Earl Diamant, D-I-M-E-N-T. I'm a deputy fire marshal with Portland Fire, but I'm also representing the National Fire Protection Association today. I sit on the executive board of the education section of NFPA. We've been watching this process for a long, long time. When I go back to conference, we just recently were privileged to hear Canada's story about the fire-safe cigarette. And some of the things that I heard, I won't be refuting directly a lot of the things, but I know that Canada did some extensive research. And in this product, one thing that I can tell you is there is no appreciable difference in their research as to taste, effect, or anything with these cigarettes. There's not an additional manufacturing cost. I heard the issues of testing. I'm always confused when I hear testing and the assumption that that's going to be a state cost, when virtually every other product out there, if it has to have a UL testing, that's done by the manufacturers themselves. So as far as infrastructure, I understand as I hear them talking about revenue losses on taxes, and I really have to take issue with that. And I certainly don't have any data with me, but if I were given a product that tastes the same that actually I knew would keep my mother or my father safer, and that there was less chance that I would burn my house down with that product, and it still maintained the same level of satisfaction, not being a smoker, I'm not sure what that is, I'm not entirely sure I would run to the internet to buy the old cigarette. That's just me personally, but I find that in some of the testimony I'm hearing today, I'm wondering what's going on with that exactly, other than I understand there both sides have obvious issues. And I think that one of the cases were made for us during that testimony is that the reduction in sales. There were reductions in sales, but I'm not sure those reductions in sales were due to internet. What those reductions in sales were due to, what you heard earlier, is that you no longer have a self-consuming product. That does two things. What a non-self-consuming product will do is, number one, if it is dropped between the cushion, it's not going to start a fire. But the other piece that we often forget about is that with something that you don't have to pay attention to, it becomes an automatic behavior. As a child growing up in a world that smoked, I can remember being burned a couple of times by my mother, accidentally, because you forget the thing is there. So what you do is not only do you have a product that won't start a fire, you also have a product now that is no longer an automatic behavior because you have to pay attention to it. You have to smoke it. So it now no longer becomes an automatic behavior, much less subject to a mistake, because it is now a behavior that has to be paid attention to. And that would end my testimony. Thank you very much.
Very good. I have a question. I don't know if either of you can answer it, or maybe it's a question for Mr. Whalen in that first panel. New York has now had a year of experience selling fire-safe cigarettes. They started in June of 2004. Do we know if there's been a reduction in cigarette-related fires, deaths?
Chair Gordley, Representative Devlin, it's too early to tell. They probably won't have that information for approximately another year. They've just completed their first year. But in advance of that, I'd like to get Chuck Tomlin up here, if I may.
In fact, we have him listed. I'm going to ask Mr. Tomlin to come up, and also Deborah Buchanan. You've answered my question, Mr. Whalen. Thank you. Mr. Whalen, can I ask you to
get lost?
Yeah.
Madam Chair,
I never ask.
As they say in my part of the world, I'm out of here.
Get lost. In fact, please stay in the room. Good things are going to happen here. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, Senator Devlin, Deborah Buchanan, Department of Revenue. The department is neutral on this bill, Madam Chair. I did just want to address the testimony by Mr. Nelson and Mr. Kosasan, because there was reference made to a memo that the Department of Revenue prepared 4 years ago relating to a $100 million estimate of revenue loss from illegal activity in cigarettes. And I did just want to say that the legislature gave us increased resources to enforce the cigarette tax laws. Since that time, 4 years ago, we did not find substantial noncompliance by retailers or distributors in the state. There was an increase in lack of compliance in internet sales. But if you want further information about the performance of the task force or what the revenue loss estimates might be today, I'd be happy to get you that information. I did just want to clarify that $100 million was an old estimate and was not reflected in our experience over the last 4 years.
Thank you for that clarification. And how quickly can you get us the information about the internet sales compliance to date?
I should be able to get that to you tomorrow, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Thomas, good afternoon.
Thank you, Chair Gordley, Senator Devlin. Thank you for hearing this bill at this critical time. I'd like to just respond very briefly to some of the issues that were raised by opponents to the bill and also just add a note of urgency about the bill. The federal legislation does, in fact, propose the same standard as being proposed here in Oregon, the same standard in New York, and would apply it nationally. That standard was developed really in the late 80s and has been around since that time. And for every congressional session since that time, the tobacco industry has opposed national standards. They are, and had they supported it, there's no doubt, I think we know that those national standards would have been enacted and we would have safe cigarettes in Oregon today. So to have them come up and even Mr. Nelson's client, R.J. Reynolds, testified at the first hearing that they opposed those standards. In fact, Senator Burdick asked them very pointedly, and their representative, who had come from some Washington, D.C. law firm, said that they opposed the national legislation, or at least didn't support the national legislation. So if that isn't a change that we've effected here in Oregon, then I'm very proud of that. Secondly, the issue of decreased sales. Well, fortunately, in Oregon, sales have been decreasing for a long time due to the efforts of tobacco prevention and control and to the increasing understanding of our population of the dangers of smoking. There is absolutely no evidence anywhere that the change from a fire-causing cigarette to a fire-safe cigarette causes any individual decrease in cigarette consumption. I wish it would, but it doesn't. The third, in terms of enforcement and the so-called black market or gray market, passage of this bill would actually help fight that because it gives the Department of Justice an additional remedy for enforcement. Surely those who are evading Oregon taxes illegitimately and illegally aren't going to go out and test their cigarettes to be fire safe. And so when we catch those people, when we go into the stores and see that they're being sold, or go into the distributors and see that they're being sold, they're not going to have the fire safe certification. So in addition to collecting the taxes and applying the tax penalty, the Department of Justice will have the additional enforcement enforcement mechanism of these civil penalties. Mr. Nelson referred to a decline in consumption in New York. Well, I think all of us are sophisticated enough to know that New York is not Oregon. New York has much higher taxes and is surrounded by states that where many people, especially in New York City, actually live. They live in Connecticut. They live in New Jersey. So they're places that are easily accessible and account for any decline there. The merit cigarettes. The merit cigarettes, as Mr. Nelson may not know, but certainly Mr. Gardner, who's the Philip Morris lobbyist, know, the decline in the merit cigarette had nothing to do with them using them as an experiment as a fire-safe cigarette. They were due entirely to the failure to promote those cigarettes
which is an additional tragedy. You would think that if a company had a cigarette that was fire safe, that they would promote them as fire safe. But in fact, if you look at the packet of Barrett cigarettes that are sold here in Oregon, here in Salem, they don't say anything about being designed to reduce the propensity for ignition. They have a little paper select blue sticker on them. The fact is that Philip Morris decided not to promote Merit cigarettes, to promote, it's a light, low-tar cigarette, and they decided to promote Marlboro Lights instead. And finally, on Internet sales. Internet sales are a real problem. They're a real problem because they make cigarettes cheaper. But there have been some strides recently. Apparently, the major credit card companies have made a policy decision not to allow the use of credit cards in the sale of Internet, in the Internet sale of cigarettes, and that should cut down a great deal on that. The Internet sale is a problem, but the solution to that problem is not to defeat a bill like this that makes life safer for Oregonians. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Tallman. Questions or comments? Again, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else wishing to testify on Senate Bill 738-A? Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 738-A and open a public and open a work session on Senate Bill 738-A.
Madam Chair.
Senator Devlin.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 735A to the full Senate Special Budget Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Is there any discussion or objection? Okay. The motion is accepted, and I would just like to say again for the record that the point has been made through testimony, or actually several points have been made through testimony about why this legislation is needed at this time. The fire marshal and others have pointed out that cigarettes are a cause of fatal fires in Oregon and nationally. In fact, some of the testimony we have in front of us, written testimony, says that cigarettes are the leading cause of fatal fires in Oregon and nationally. I just want to appreciate all the people who took time to be present and provide testimony on the measure before us. And I'd ask that clerk call the roll.
Aye.
Aye. And the measure passes. And Senator Devlin, did you want to carry this to?
I can.
Okay. Is there any other business for the good of the order, Mr. Wilson?
No, Madam Chair. Tomorrow you have the Oregon Youth Authority and a bill dealing with the Psychiatric Security Review Board and juveniles.
Thank you. The committee is adjourned. Thank you.